Hello and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. This is episode 372. I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, and with me, as always, are Guillaume Veillette.
I'm completely unprepared. I'm drinking warm beer. It's awful.
Ugh. James Jones.
I drank a lot of not warm beer earlier, but okay.
No. And joining us this week, John still being out on travel. We think he'll be back next time. But joining us in his place is our very special guest, Donald Terrio.
Good news, everyone. The Wii U is no longer in the video game dictionary next to drop-off.
Yep, there's a brand new Wii U game to talk about this week, and we're going to do it. So thank you, Donald, for doing this. Of course, many of you will recognize his voice from the past couple years of our telethon, and Donald hosts the Nintendo Free Radio podcast, which is some kind of weird, it's obviously related to our show, but it's not really very much like our show. So I don't know. I wouldn't want to call it a spinoff or, I don't know how to describe it, Donald. How would you describe it?
Remember when Ty Sugart wanted to do a podcast about the NWR forums? That's pretty much what it is.
Yeah. Whoa. Okay. Yeah. That's good.
I don't know. That's good. I'm not sure
it's
that's
a good description of it.
That's company you want to be in.
Yeah, it's kind of a community podcast, right? Kind of like what Carl and Zach Miller used to do, I think, over on the Game Informer message boards back when Billy was in charge of that magazine for a couple of years. And that's how we found out about them. They kind of followed Billy and found out that he used to, you know, work on our side, and they found out about that, and the rest was history. Anyway, why don't we kick off new business, because there is, like I said, a big Wii U game to talk about this week. It is Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze. Have we all four played this? James,
I have not.
Did you pick this up? Okay, so three of us have played it.
Yeah.
But Guillaume, why don't you kick it off? I would imagine you are really enjoying this. I mean, this is you're a huge fan of the first one. You're the 2D platform guru, you seem to never tire of them. So the fact that this is coming out, you know, in conjunction with so many other ones on the Wii U, it never bothered you whatsoever. And I seem to recall you were highly anticipating this game.
Yes, I was. Am I enjoying it as much as you seem to think I am? Maybe, maybe not. I'm not sure. Because the, the first game I played entirely by myself. All right, so now I'm discovering the joys of playing Donkey Kong Country in co-op. And it's not as easy as when you're playing by yourself. There are some advantages, because as long as one of the two people is still alive, is still hanging on, the other person has the chance to jump back in and hope that the other one is going to pop their balloon and free them from that floating barrel. And, that we'll be able to keep going through the level. But, that doesn't always happen, because, the levels are hectic and they're always constantly moving forward. And, the game is pretty tough. So yeah, like the game is very much like the first game, I would say. Like, there's a lot of, it's a platformer almost entirely focused on forward momentum. There are many instances where, sure, like, you can take your time and explore a little bit and find some secrets. There are even secret exits that lead to secret levels. So that's pretty cool. That's always an element that I enjoy. But most of the time, you're on a platform and you shouldn't linger, because that platform is just going to disappear under your feet, or you enter a barrel and you're timed, but you may or may not know it. You know, there might be subtle hints that something is about to blow up in your face. But sometimes if you take too long,
like things falling forward from the background and coming down upon the barrel, and you have to kind of judge, even though you're not actually looking at it like a 3D screen, but you're trying to judge at what point in time will that thing intersect and hurt you, because you might want to wait, because some balloon or banana is going up and down on the other side. You might want to wait until the last possible second, but it turns out that judging the timing of those, especially I find the three-dimensional elements of the levels are pretty frustrating for me. I find it difficult to judge the depth of those things as they're moving in and out, and they're, you know, and they're only active during a certain piece of that animation. And it's,
right. That's the thing. Like, I don't think that the game is unfair in that I do believe that you always have the time when you see something to react. But the thing is, like, the game does distract you with lives, extra lives, or, you know, like one of the Kong letters that are spinning out of reach, you know, and you're waiting for the precise time to shoot from the barrel. And that distracts you from the fact that, oh, there's a giant statue that's shaking and tumbling very slowly forward, and sometimes not so slowly forward. So it's just, you know, you always have to be on your toes, and you always have to assume that you're not safe where you're standing. And I don't think it's a bad thing. It does keep the pace, you know, very, very fast, and you have to keep moving forward.
Well, I don't think it's a bad thing in principle, but I got to tell you why I think it's not a great thing for this game, the way that this game does it. And this is probably my number one biggest criticism of this series, which I enjoy with a lot of reservations. I'm not a hater on these. I bought both of them with my own damn money. So, and I beat the first one, beat all the levels, and I intend to do the same on this one. But my issue with it is that the level design, it kind of plays at something like a runner game, like a Bit Trip Runner, where there's basically one exact, correct, optimal way to play through the level. And if you don't pretty much stick pretty close to that plan, you're going to die. You know, and in those games, I think it works because the path is telegraphed to you. The graphics are simple. The mechanics are limited. You don't really even have direct control over your character's movement in a 2D space. And so all you can do is jump, duck, etc. And I feel like the Donkey Kong Country games that Retro has made, especially this one, they do want to keep propelling you forward, like you said. But the levels are much more complex, much more visually confusing, and the controls are a little more sluggish. I mean, people say that it really does feel like you're controlling this big hulking dude. And I agree. I don't know that that's a good thing, but I think the game does pull that off very well. I just don't know that I would prefer for it to feel that way. But I don't think those elements really add up to an environment that's conducive to the kind of like super nitpicky, kind of fast-paced, exacting 2D platformer like something like a Super Meat Boy or a Bit Trip Runner. So I feel like the game is trying to do something that requires a lot of precision, and it's giving you very sloppy kind of, overcompensating kinds of physics to do it with. And that's what irritates me about it.
I'm not sure I see that. Like I've seen you tweet a post somewhere, like someone who had a similar opinion. And right now I'm not at the end of the game. I still have two worlds to go, but, I haven't really encountered these places where it's just impossible to get past this obstacle that you had to memorize a level beforehand. I feel like
I'm not saying that. I'm not saying memorization. I'm saying that I don't feel like there are, you know, like in a 2D Mario game, of course, it's a different franchise. You hold it to different standards, maybe, or it's trying to do something different. But in a 2D Mario game, there's usually at least two ways to get through the level. You know, there's a high and a low path. They intersect. A lot of times there's just a kind of an obstacle you need to get over, but there may be multiple ways. Maybe you jump off the walls. Maybe you have a power up. Maybe you do it the old fashioned way where you just time it really well. But it feels like there's often a lot of different, and you know, Super Mario 3D World really plays on this by making the levels large enough and multi-path enough that you can have four people on there who don't have to get in each other's way. Mm-hmm. But with this game, and it's funny that this also has simultaneous two player, which I agree with you is actually really frustrating and kind of even more difficult.
It's fun, but yeah.
Yeah. But I lost my train of thought. I'm sorry.
So how are you guys controlling the game? Are you using the analog stick option or the...
With their minds! Wait, what?
No, I'm using the analog stick. I tried with the D-pad at first, and what that control option does is that it switches the roles of the X and Y buttons and the L and R triggers, and that completely messed me up. You know, like you have to hold the trigger when you're using the D-pad to run, and then you press X and Y to grab barrels or grab vines.
So you can't set those thing. You can't no. set running and the other actions independently.
Which I absolutely don't understand. Why would you only have these two very specific control options, and why would they completely switch? Like, why would changing the D-pad to the control stick completely change the face buttons? What they do? It doesn't really.
Why
make
would
sense
they make you shake the controller to roll in the previous game?
I actually didn't mind that. Like, back when I first tried the D-pad option, I was like, you know what, this doesn't work at all for me, and I kind of want to try going back to the Wii Remote. And then I found out
you can, I think.
Yeah, no,
I think it's still an option.
But I was considering it, you know, like because yeah. I felt
I've
like,
been using the Pro Controller as well as just the gamepad right. joystick myself.
Yeah. But yeah, like the D-pad option to me was so bad that I was considering going back to the Wii controls. But then I found out yeah. about the kind of the fix, which is to use the C-stick, which really works well, in my opinion. I don't have any troubles at all with precision or it just works as well as the D-pad.
Yeah, I think so too. I think this game is really pretty. And the music is really nice. Actually, James, I think you would appreciate the music quite a bit. It's definitely on a different tier than the last game. It's still sometimes a little bit too circusy for my taste, but, you know, it's understandable given the, you know, the character and everything. There is one song in particular. This is on World 5, I think. So, Guy, you probably haven't quite seen this yet. But on World 5, the underwater theme. It comes on dynamically anytime in any level where you go into the water. So sometimes it only happens for a few seconds, but if you go down there and you spend some time, and you will spend some time underwater in World 5, I think that song is like maybe the best song in a Nintendo game I've heard since Metroid Prime's Fendrana Drift's theme. I mean, it's excellent. It's actually a little bit similar, but it's really excellent. And it's just kind of out of place. I mean, it sounds very different than the rest of the soundtrack on this game, although all of it's pretty high quality.
Well, it's probably the most visually impressive game that I've seen on the Wii U so far. Yeah, even ahead of like a 3D World or even a Wind Waker HD for that matter. But I'm not a big fan of Wind Waker HD's art style for reasons that probably are too complex for this show. Now,
this show's only for simpletons.
Yeah, we can't handle
it. Let's just roll on before I have to sit here and cry.
Sorry, James. I only had a chance to really play it for a couple of levels just because between postage and the fact that I had to play something else for the show last night. But I do see where you're coming from with the momentum gameplay, because I'm currently laid up in the first level with Rambi, mm-hmm. and I'm having some real trouble getting through that fire dodging sequence where you have to get away from the falling tower that you mentioned earlier. Is that something where I should probably switch up control style just to save my own sanity? I'm on D-pad.
Yeah, I don't recommend D-pad. It's a little bit weird. Although at this point you might be used to it. I mean, some people like it. I just my brain could not accept it. But yeah, like definitely try switching up the controls if it's not working out for you.
It's just there's something weird about playing a 2D platformer with an analog stick.
Yeah, well, normally, but this game makes it work. And, you know, Super Meat Boy, I wasn't really a fan of it, but it was designed for the control stick, and it seems like people seem to like it. I mean, as long as the game is really made for the type of control scheme, I don't really have a problem with it. It's more like when playing Mega Man with it is less. Yeah, it's not recommended.
And I have to say, I don't know if it's because I played DuckTales last year and really enjoyed that, but so far, I still think Cranky Kong is the best of the four characters.
In two players, it's really, like, I really miss...
He's fun. I mean, he takes more skill to use than the other ones.
Playing co-op... I really miss the animal, not the animal buddies, but having Diddy Kong or Dixie Kong being there to just haul my ass to safety. Because playing as plain Donkey Kong all the time, it's really a challenge, to say the least. And a lot of levels, it doesn't feel like they're constructed so that Donkey Kong himself can actually make it through. There's definitely some secret exits or secret passages that are made so that you absolutely need Dixie Kong, for instance. Cranky Kong, we used him at the beginning a little bit, but it became clear pretty quickly that Dixie Kong is the way to go if you're actually trying to survive these levels. Yeah, but yeah, like the I agree with Donald. Like, it's a very, very visually impressive game. The enemy design this time is probably the best that this series has ever seen, which I know, like, a lot of people would say, well, it's not saying much because the Kremlins or whatever they were called, were, you know, googly eyed monsters, and the tiki torches, guys were just, I don't know, pretty plain. But in this one, yeah, it's almost
bland.
It's almost a Pixar quality. You've got these penguins with these facial expressions. They look so hurt and so betrayed when you jump on their heads. It's priceless. And I don't know, it makes us chuckle over here every time. And yeah, the animations are really, really good. And just there's a nice variety visually in the levels. Like, there's a whole savanna island which has these kind of like paper mache giraffes. I'm not sure how to describe that, but it's very distinctive. It's very it's not anything that I've seen in other platformers or video games in general.
It looks like something you'd see in Tearaway.
Kind of, yeah. And unlike, I don't know, unlike that one level in Super Mario that was like Starry Nights, there's kind of a constant reinvention of the environments and the visuals in this game. So you don't get bored always looking at the same stuff all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
You know, I think that the game is probably, it's hard for me to judge because I haven't played solo all that much. The times that I've played solo, it was usually me going back trying to clean up like the rest of the puzzle pieces or the Kong letters that we had missed. But I didn't feel that the game was really that much harder or more unfair than the first game. And, but of course, at that point, I had already gone through the levels once and I knew a little bit what to expect more. But even going through co-op the first time, like, there's just a bunch of things that make it look like the game is not designed at all for co-op. And yet they went and did it anyway. And they didn't fix the obvious problems that co-op has. But I am still enjoying it. But I don't understand why you can so easily lose two lives, you know, whenever, you know, like if the one player dies and then the other player keeps on, but then die before reviving the first person, then you lose like three lives total.
Yeah, I'll do you better. Why does this game have lives?
Yeah, well,
it's completely ridiculous. You literally go and buy them at the store with the banana coins that you have way too many of anyway. It's completely ridiculous that this game still has those dumbass balloons that, I mean, you can churn through 20 lives on a level easily, but then you just, if you get low, you just have to go to the store and buy more. I mean, it's so stupid.
But at the same time,
completely pointless.
Well, it might be for the co-op, actually, because in theory, you could tag team your way through a boss as long as one person survives. Like, one person just has to keep alive long enough to get the other person out of his barrel. And you could keep doing that indefinitely if you didn't have a set limit of lives.
Anyway, it's a trivial thing to get obsessed over, but I think it just blows my mind. It's even worse in this game than in Mario, because in this game you actually lose a lot of lives, but it's so easy to replace them. It just puts you in this cycle that means nothing. It's just really dumb. But yeah, I think, you know, someone on Twitter was asking me like, hey, if I really liked the first game, would I like this one too? And I was like, yeah, it's the same thing. It's not the same game. It's new content, but this game isn't any different. It's not any better or any worse, I don't think, than the first game. I mean, there are subtle differences. There are little things they've added. Maybe some things aren't quite as good. But overall, I think the same people are going to like both of these games. If you didn't like the first one, this is certainly not going to change your mind, and vice versa. So
I don't know. Like,
which is good news for Nintendo. The first one was a big hit. It sold a ton of copies. It was one of the most popular Wii games in Japan for the last few years. So I think it'll do really well for them.
Yeah, but I do think that they got more creative with a lot of the secrets and a lot of the, like subtle things about level design. And so, yeah, maybe it's not like big in your face changes. It's essentially a sequel to a 2D platformer, but I don't think that the game is more the same than, like, I don't think it's on the level even of New Super Mario Brothers, you know, like that series. I think there's probably more reinvention.
Well, no, but those are shameless. You wouldn't want to be compared to those, okay? But no, it is more creative than, you know, the difference between New Super Mario Brothers
two. How is this more of a shameless, you know, like copy-paste job than Rayman?
Well, which Rayman are we talking about?
You talking about Origins to Legends?
Well, you know, the last two ones. Yeah, like, is there that big, you know, of a, like, is it completely different or is it kind of, you know, like the same?
Well, about assets? A third of the game is a mode of gameplay that didn't even exist in the previous game. Some of it is some of the most clever things in that whole
package. Yeah, so thanks to the Wii U, there's that, sure. So yeah, maybe, so is this what Donkey Kong needed, some sort of a gamepad?
I don't know about that, but it would have been nice if they had like included more of the animal helpers to kind of mix up the gameplay a little bit, or maybe not go back to the same minecart and the same rocket barrel mechanics that were already pretty much, I thought, really, really wrung out in the last game. I don't really think they're doing anything new with either one of these. The rocket is still incredibly frustrating to use because the angle of it changes as you increase the thrust, so it's very difficult to use it accurately. That's the fun of the challenge, but it's not any different this time than it is last time. So there's really just, it's like a level pack, those parts of the game, you know, and I think a lot of the platforming levels are more than that. I think they do introduce new platforming elements and they add the new characters and the boss battles are significantly different in this game. There's really not a big hook that tells me like, yeah, this game, it's definitely in the same series, but they did some like big new stuff for it. They didn't. It's the same thing. Like the camera moves more, you know?
I'm just going to say, I'm so glad they took out the blowing. That was long overdue to be gone.
The pulling stuff out of the ground is pretty much exactly the same thing. It is. It means you stop running, you stand there for a second, and you do something until something magical pops out of the ground, and then you can start running again.
Yeah, but you don't have to, you know, like, press down, and then, like, there's fewer steps. It's not as game-stopping as blowing was. But about the minecart, like, I don't think I agree at all, because, like, the first minecart level, you have a lot of foreshadowing of what's to come. Like, there's a lot of rotation. Like, you go around this big tree and you can see ahead of time what's going to come out, what's going to be in your way. And, you know, as you rotate through and, like the second level, you alternate between minecarts and this kind of, you're riding this, water ride and you can jump in and out of the water and you have to time your jumps really precisely to access certain secrets or go dive under the enemies and things like that. And then you've got other minecart levels where you actually have to switch between tracks, like the camera pans a little bit, you know, in a quarter view.
Yeah, like in Sonic Adventure 2.
Yeah. So, you know, like there's I don't think
good
it's,
company.
I don't think it's the same minecart level repeated over and over, and it's not the same minecart levels that we've played in the first game. There's so far all the minecart levels I've seen had something different to them.
Okay. Yeah. That's a valiant defense. It doesn't work. No, I mean, seriously, I just, the changes you described did not feel terribly significant to me. You know, I'm not going to deny they're not there. It just didn't really make any of it feel. I thought the part where you go underwater was neat, but you know, I'm near the end of this game and that's probably the most interesting thing I've seen them do with minecart levels. I mean, there's already four other games worth of minecart levels, including some stuff in DK64, actually. That's on top of the, so anyway, I don't know that we need more minecart levels in this world. I don't know.
I like them.
I think they're really frustrating and irritating most of the time, but all right. Well, let's move on to some other game. So James is going to be up next for new business with, I think, a game that we briefly spoke of last week but didn't really get into the meat of it.
Sure. So I have – are we talking about Weapon Damase?
Well, yeah.
Okay. So I've played a bit more of Weapon de Amasse since we last recorded. It's, you know, I with some of the commentary on the site in the reviews was that there's not a lot of depth to the game, which to an extent is forgivable because this game was one quarter of a full game. So I'm kind of willing to forgive a little bit of shallowness, and there is indeed a little bit of shallowness. I've not gotten too deep into the game. I guess I'm making like level 3 equipment at this point. It's fun, but it is quite repetitive and relatively simplistic. But in an enjoyable way, I would say. It's not. Once you sort of master the game, it's just different degrees of difficulty of what you're already doing.
Right.
The rhythm stuff gets a little bit more difficult. The weapon shapes become somewhat more complicated. And because as you tap away the excess metal forging your weapons, the space you have to hit gets smaller and smaller. So obviously when you're doing a broadsword, it's quite easy because it just gets narrower and narrower in the middle. But when you're doing something like an axe, and you can't hit the same area too many times. Well, the axe head's great, but when you have to leave the axe head because you can't hit that area anymore, well, now all you have is the handle. And that's quite difficult.
Huh. It sounds like a pretty typical rhythm game progression.
It is a rhythm game.
But the progression you're talking about sounds a lot like Uwindon or Elite Beat Agents or something like that.
Absolutely.
The core mechanics aren't going to change that much. It's really more about what is around that. You know, do the patterns stay interesting, but more importantly, is the context, you know, worthwhile?
Well, since each stanza is quite short, I mean, like 2 seconds, the patterns themselves really don't have a ton of time to be interesting. They're not really musical. They're just patterns. They're the kind of rhythms that, if I was teaching someone really basic introductory music, I would have them tap out just so we can learn about rhythm.
Or are you talking about like dot, 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 dot?
Yeah, basically.
Like patapon?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's real simple. But at the same time, it's very short. So it's, you know, I'm enjoying it. It's not, I don't love it, but it's a competently put together, you know, I don't want to say minigame. I'm not sure what we call this, like it's larger than a mini game, but not. It's obviously not something you would build into a full retail game.
Sure. Like if this was, well, I mean, what is it? $10?
Yeah, it's $10.
That doesn't sound unreasonable for what you're describing.
Yeah, I would say that's probably a little steep. I think $8's probably a fairer price.
Oh.
Maybe a little bit.
We're picking nits there.
Oh, it is $8. Never mind. Then that's probably closer to reality.
Okay, but do you like the story? That's trying what I was trying to tease out of you earlier. I mean, that's really what. If I'm buying this, it's not because I feel like pounding on swords as a rhythm game. It's because I want this weird world and the weird story behind it.
It's real goofy, and there's when we touched on it last week, but there's essentially this version of Twitter that's in game where the heroes you've sent out on quest, you didn't send them out on quests. The heroes you've equipped for quests tweet their progress. And some of that stuff's actually kind of amusing. You have these, one of the longer term character sets you get are these two twins. I guess they're twins. Maybe they're just sisters. Look very similar. They are professional circus gymnasts, and they had a sword stolen from them that they is sort of an ancestral object they used in their act. So it's not really a combat sword, but they wanted to train with their real sword so they can go get it back. And a lot of their misadventures in learning to use a sword are somewhat amusing. But that doesn't mean there's a lot of time of you sitting there holding down the fast forward button because you don't have any jobs left to do right now.
Hmm.
Which can be a little tedious, but at the same time, it is they're the affairs of the people you've sent out, and as you get to know them more, you know, start to understand better, they are amusing in general. Mm-hmm. In specific, they're probably not that great individually, but as a whole, they can be somewhat of a general amusement. The actual story so far is still relatively basic of, hey, we run a weapon shop, we're going to rent you some weapons, and everybody who wants to rent weapons from us is some kind of freak show.
Does it feel like there's a larger sort of goal here, though? I mean, So is it just random people going out and doing random quests, or does it feel like everyone's sort of working towards some kind of common goal that might result in a plot resolution?
There is a countdown to the return of, and I'm trying to remember the phrase they use for it, but essentially it's the grand demon.
Mm.
And it's the big bad that's coming back, but it's like a straight up serious countdown. Like he's coming back soon, and it just has a little indicator showing how close he is to coming back.
Nice.
And basically,
like Majora's Mask.
Yeah, basically, it's some of your heroes are explicitly training for that, and some of them are off doing other unrelated stuff.
End of the world, what do I care? I got business to take care of.
My guess is that eventually you run into a situation where the all the characters that are recurring play a role in the defeat of the big bad.
Okay, well that gives me hope. Actually, I mean that sounds interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. I'm not sure it's fair as a game. That's probably what I'd call it. It's,
okay.
Some of the jokes in the game just miss terribly because they're too heavily weighted on things like memes and over-localization. Which is the real thing. You can localize a game too hard.
But is that stuff funny? I mean, that
no,
might
it's
be
not.
Okay.
That stuff's not funny. It's the jokes they don't mess with. The real basic situational humor, like the fact that these two girls went to go find a master to train them, and they had a name, and they found this guy, and they thought he was training them, but really he was just trying to convince them to go get honey out of a beehive because he didn't want to deal with it, because he didn't want to get stung.
You know,
I bet it's a case
where some of the jokes in the original Japanese text were so Japanese they were impossible to localize. And so they basically just replaced them with something they thought an American audience would get into, especially an audience who's probably pretty hardcore if you know what the hell this game is and you're downloading it from the eShop. And, you know, I think I could see a game that had like a lot of weird inside baseball games industry humor or, you know, weird Twitter stuff. I could see that being really funny if you did it well.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that alone is not automatically funny. You have to execute on the premise.
Right.
But I think that could be funny, especially in this weird anachronistic context of a Japanese RPG medieval weapon shop.
It's real hit and miss. Like some of it is stuff that's just a live blog of what they're doing. Situationally, the dumb garbage they're doing most of the time, because pretty much at this point, every one of the heroes you've interacted with is a terrible hero. And for different reasons. In some cases, they're just too far up their own ass. Like, they're too obsessed with being a hero to do it effectively. Or in some cases, they're like generic JRPG, I'm gonna help everyone across the street and rescue a cat from a tree and all this other good stuff, as opposed to actually going out and fighting enemies. Kind of person who, you know, you give him a sword, but in his live blog for his event, he doesn't actually use it because he's too busy doing other mundane stuff that you really don't need to be a hero to do. Like, some of that stuff's fine. It's just when they obviously replace, as you said, something anachronistic and said, hey, here we go. Where it just comes off as like, all right, that's really stilted.
Yeah, they don't need to go to the please understand low-hanging fruit on some of these jokes from the sound of it.
Well, to be fair, I'm okay with going to please understand because that's still one of my go-tos. But that's because that constantly gets refreshed by Mr. Iwata, so I'm okay.
Oh, yeah. No, he's not letting go of that one.
He constantly asks me to understand, and I'm constantly willing to give him that.
Yeah, as long as Nintendo keeps messing up, there will be a use for that phrase.
Oh, I don't even think you need to mess up anymore. He asks you to understand things that really don't require you to be told to understand them. Please understand that games sometimes take a long time to make. I'm aware! Thanks!
I know this is going to be hard for you to accept, little Timmy.
But sometimes
a
game will not come out the day we announce it. Please understand.
Damn it!
What?
It's funny.
You mean
Mario Kart's
not out
right now?
Being 5 years
old and having some appreciation for that thanks to Nintendo Power. But anyway, Donald, why don't we move on to your new business?
Okay, well, I'll sort of briefly mention here because although I've had it running for about 70 hours, I think I've only put about 8 hours into Bravely Default. Well,
you know, the timer keeps counting if you put it in sleep mode.
I have to double check that because
I don't think it does.
I don't think so. No,
I mean the Street Pass timer.
Yeah.
Oh.
I mean, you don't actually need to leave your hinged, powered up, you know, 3DS open.
He's got to fix Narendra, yo.
Yeah, but you could put it to sleep. Yeah, and the little dudes will keep building the town.
I know, I'm doing that. I have to have something going with this, with it at work. I may as well. I have 9 hours to kill, so why not? But
yeah.
But I'm only in chapter 2, and my Narendra is all level 9 out of, I think, 11.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. I was done by the end of chapter 3.
Yeah, I maxed mine out midway through chapter 3.
Yeah, and...
Well, it doesn't really matter because I still can't really afford most of the good stuff.
I like that they rebuild the town to exactly the way it was and said, no, we don't need to make anything better. We're set.
I will say, even though I can't afford most of the items I unlock through Street Pass building, the items they give you as like almost like a weird tribute, you know, to like pay the wine to the king so he doesn't burn your hut down. I feel like a lot of those are really powerful. And if you remember to use them in boss battles and things like that, they can really make a huge difference. Of course, you have numerous options if you want to kind of cheat on boss battles in this game, but.
Oh, yeah.
I don't really want to fight this boss. I can summon somebody.
You can summon me.
I can summon someone who does 60,000 damage.
Yes.
Gone.
You know what? As shitty as that sounds, like if you haven't played this game, you think that's fucked up. That's so unbalanced. That's bad game design.
This game makes no effort to balance itself though.
Right. I mean, I got to tell you, the game is pretty tough. And I mean, I'm playing on normal difficulty, I think, and it's pretty tough. And, when I run up against a boss who I've played against several times and been defeated, and I really want to move on with this very long RPG, I'm thankful for the get out of jail free card that you get in the battle system of this game. I'm like, you know what? If I've given it the old college try and I'm just not going to graduate, bam. I'm glad I can continue playing the game and see the rest of it.
I got to say, cheating is pretty much my first option. I don't bother.
You have no self-control whatsoever.
So I was around last night. I wasn't playing actively. And a friend of mine pinged me because she had used my character against a boss and one hit killed it. It was one of those branching mini bosses where you fight the leader of a group of enemies, but then their subordinates are still kind of floating around. You can clean them up if you want. And she one hit the subordinate. She's like, "Hey, could you resync so I can kill the other one too?" I'm like, "All right, you need to actually fucking try." And sure enough, I resynced it. But no, I didn't. I just went ahead and did it anyway. Great. Mm-hmm. Awesome.
If given the choice between 3 or 4 hours of grinding and one button press, I'm going to take the one button press every time.
I would at least like to have seen her attempt the boss without trying to just, I just want to kill it. Screw it. I don't need this. Oh, I was like, I'm not going to resync anymore. You're done. I'm cutting you off. It's for your own good. But I will say that the ability to use the Bravely Second to boost up, because there is a 999 maximum damage limit on any move in the game unless you use Bravely Second, which sort of blows that barrier open. I have enjoyed watching people who have, probably where I'm at, have beaten the game at this point, using Bravely Second to just come up with absurdist numbers.
Sorry, what is Bravely Second?
That's the when you press the start button and you get to take one move out of turn.
How would that let you break the damage number limit?
It's just a part of the game. You can't score more than 999 damage unless you're in the middle of one of those moves. Huh. That's just a feature of the game. They mentioned it in passing at one point.
Wait, so are you supposed to like use a special move and then like interrupt that with another special move?
No, you would just use so you'd hit the start button to do that out of turn move.
Yeah.
Then you'd pick send as your first action, then you'd actually pick a special move. And then it would send the out of turn Bravely Second move.
No shit.
And that would do more than 9999. I actually got one from somebody the other day over the random people resync. It was a healing move where somebody managed to rack up like 23,000 healing.
Holy crap.
And I'm like, why? Why did you do this?
I believe there is a move that, you know, hurts your party as well as the enemy. I think I saw someone break the damage barrier with that. So I can just imagine if you can bottle it and send it to people, That is the worst trolling. That is the best trolling.
So that's awesome.
There's an entire class, and this is when the game started.
That's like street passing someone a one coin run through Super Mario 2.
There's an entire magic user class that I like this because it forces you to use strategy where all the moves do situational damage. So, for example, if there's an attack that hurts everybody who has negative is it SP? Skill points, whatever. SP.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another one that you get the next time it levels up that hurts everyone with positive SP. Everyone, enemy and ally. And it does a ton of damage. So you really have, if you want to use them, they cost 4 MP. And so they're great. But you really have to plan out so you don't screw yourself by using them. But, I didn't think about the prospects of sending those moves as trolling. Oh. Because if you don't have that class, you have no idea what it is. And you'll just use it. And then you're going to get destroyed. Oh, that's beautiful. That's remarkable level trolling.
All right, I'm just gonna go take James off my friends list now.
Just don't. If you see that I'm sending Arcanist skills, I'm probably screwing with you.
All right, so Bravely Default, the train rolls onward. But Donald, did you have anything else you wanted to talk about this week?
Yes. This one is a PlayStation Vita game, but I think it is extremely relevant to Nintendo fans since it is basically Phoenix Wright meets 999 with dashes of Persona and arcade shooters. It's
James, breathe.
It just sounds like somebody smoked a ton of meth and designed a game.
Would it help if I said it was Spike Chunsoft?
They smoked a ton of meth and designed a game. Yeah.
Yeah, it's,
you may continue this conversation.
Yeah, it's Danganronpa Trigger Happy Havoc for the Vita. It came out a couple weeks ago. And it starts out as a visual novel where you are a Japanese school kid who's going to this exclusive high school where...
As you do.
As you always do.
And you're the president.
Nope.
No. That's only if you're a Japanese school girl.
Yeah.
Get it together.
Yeah. Each student in this school, there's a maximum of 16, is the ultimate something. Like, they have an ultimate fashionista, ultimate baseball player, and you are the ultimate lucky person because you got in by a blind draw. And then once you get to school, you fall unconscious, you wake up, school is on utter lockdown, and there's a bear saying the only way to get out is to graduate. You graduate by killing somebody and getting away with it.
Jesus Christ, Japan. What are you doing?
Yeah. You know, Japan, Battle Royale wasn't fucked up enough.
No, we need to have an intervention right now. Look, Japan, I'm doing the best I can to keep the jokes to a minimum, but you got to meet me halfway. I'm just asking you, no homicidal bears. I mean,
no.
/ school administrators. That's all I'm asking. Like, I'll spot you there and just say, okay, well, that didn't happen. But there's a limit. And at some point, I'm going to have to go, no, that's too much. And I'm feeling it right now. I'm feeling it. That's too much.
Ooh, we haven't even gotten to the really intense part yet.
Oh, good. Cause the school administrator / master of ceremony / executioner bear isn't intense enough.
No, because he gets one kill just to prove that, you know, don't mess with them. And then the next day, somebody else dies. One of your fellow students. And the only person who could have done it is another student. So now you're playing 14-player Phoenix Wright. With everybody serving as the prosecutor, the defendant, and the witnesses at the same time. And when you present evidence, you are actually firing truth bullets.
This is starting to sound a little bit like a porn game at this point. And then you just blow away your clothes and you win.
Nope. It hasn't gotten that far yet. Considering they're all in high school, I'm pretty sure they would get in a lot of trouble if they tried to do that.
Not in Japan! And apparently relatively speaking, taking off clothing versus murder? I'm going to go ahead and say it's a relatively benign infraction.
Yeah, man, who needs clothes? I'd rather be alive.
When you're dead! Oh, my God.
Oh, God, yeah. So you're
So this got localized, huh?
Yeah, this got localized. The sequel
Somebody said this is a game that the West needs.
And the sequel already got greenlit for localization as well.
Good God.
Yes, because after, in the middle of these debates, they break into a random game of Hangman they call Epiphany Anagram.
PlayStation Vita. PlayStation Vita, right here.
Yeah. And at the end of it, after you've constructed the case, demonstrated with manga panels exactly just how that person died, the murderer goes into Ty Sugart mode, and you play a rhythm game to shoot down ad hominem.
Is there, you know, 3DS games occasionally give you the warning, especially Wii games did, where it says it's time to take a break. These come up, it's time to re-examine your life.
No. I did the first one of these last night as we're recording this, and I normally can multitask while I'm playing games. I lost about an hour and a half just trying to get through the first case. I'm making it sound extremely stupid, but it is extremely intense once you actually get into it.
Cool. God damn it.
I don't even know what to say about that.
Oh, this is like somebody said, guys, I've got an idea. And then the person then goes, done. And he just thought, all right, I can do whatever I want now. Let's see how far I can go before he regrets this decision immediately.
Is this a Yute Saito joint?
No, but...
Like, Yute Saito teamed up with Suda51 to make a game, and this is what they came up with?
I have no idea who's behind it, honestly. They don't really highlight the developers. All they have is just the Spike Chunsoft logo and the fact that NIS America are the ones who drew the short straw in localizing.
Oh, no, because nobody else would. I mean, Nippon Ichi is just, they just localize whatever bullshit comes across their table. Like, yeah, we'll do this.
You know, I gotta get up on my soapbox here. If your game is released in the United States of America and it's called Danganronpa, you did not localize that game. Okay. You can fill out the whole form, but if you don't sign it at the end, it doesn't count. You have to localize the name of your game that is in English that you're selling in America. Danganronpa, what the fuck is that?
What the fuck is anything?
Go all the way, baby.
Call it
Murder School or something, but Danganronpa, what the...
That sounds awful.
That doesn't even sound Japanese to me.
I think the name supposedly translates to, like, bullet talk or something along those lines, but...
Oh, God.
Yeah, the problem with Murder School is that would be, like, the preferred title for basically every game from Japan,
No, that would be like, that sounds like Nancy Drew goes to the murder school, like shovelware garbage for the PC.
Goosebumps Murder School.
Oh, it's just like, that's something you'd see on the discount bin at Best Buy. Please to take.
Well, I'm sure I'm glad you're liking it, Donald. I don't know that this is a game I will ever play, but I would like to hear more tales from its creepy murder school with homicidal teddy bear superintendent. I'm going to have to wrap
headmaster.
Up.
He's a headmaster. This is Japan.
Excuse me, headmaster. Yes.
There you go.
So I'm going to have to wrap up new business, and I'm going to do it with a game I mentioned last week, but I've played a lot more of, and I really, really like it. It's called Strider. Again, this really is, you know, kind of the spiritual successor to the NES version of Strider, which is my favorite version. And it is so much fun. It is like a really hyper-paced ninja action game set in really the structure of a Metroid game. And I don't say Metroidvania. There really are no RPG type elements to this. There's no equipping of different weapons or anything like that. Really almost no talking. The cutscenes are horrible, but they're also very few and far between and completely inconsequential. You know, and Shadow Complex had some of that same syndrome, if I recall. But Strider is really fun, and someone was asking me if it's as good as Shadow Complex. I think it's about as good, although it's quite a different style. It's probably twice as fast as Shadow Complex, which was much more, you know, you'd get into a room and the enemies were very powerful, and you really had to kind of hide in the shadows, poke out and shoot them when they turned their backs. There were stealth elements almost, or at least you had to be cautious about the shooting. And sort of use cover and, you know, and bounce, ultimately like bounce shots off of walls to get guys before they could get you. Strider is not nearly that nuanced. It's mostly right, run and jump and slash the guy in midair. It's very, very straightforward.
It's a timing game more than anything.
Yes. It's very twitchy that you have an insane amount of aerial control over Strider, especially once you get the double jump and then the air dash that lets you dash in any of the primary eight directions. So basically you're triple jumping now, and you can change direction constantly throughout your jump profile. So when you now have the ability to do that even twice, you can get out of ridiculous jams, you know, but it's almost like Smash Brothers where you just keep, you have one more chance and then one more chance. And if you really learn to finesse that stuff, you can get out of trouble almost every single time. So that stuff is so much fun. And the game, I think the combat's really satisfying. Most of the enemies don't take very many hits, but they really kind of, it's like almost like the Zero games on GBA, where the enemies kind of get sliced in half, you know, by your sword. They're all robots and stuff like that. And it just feels really cool to see them break apart. And every enemy, you know, kind of is destroyed in a different way. And it's not gory. There's no blood or anything like that. But it's so much fun. The upgrades, a couple of them aren't super interesting, but a lot of them so far I found to be, you know, pretty significant. They either change the combat to the point where you're going to be using it all the time, like a lot, as much as you can. So I don't feel like there's a lot of wasted weapons that are just really niche and they don't, you know, it's like something you try it once and then you don't really mess with it anymore. I feel like I'm really integrating all the combat upgrades into the way that I do the fighting in the game. And then the mobility upgrades are, you know, I already said, you know, things like sliding and double jumping and air dashing. I think really made the game feel a lot different as you're playing through. And you know, the game doesn't lean really heavily on the non-linear Metroid level design in the sense that it never really challenges you with figuring out where to go next or how to get there. It's just that as you play through the game, the direction you're moving changes a lot in the sense that some areas you're kind of generally moving to the right. Sometimes you're kind of generally moving down or to the left. So it's non-linear in that sense. And, you know, you go in and out of different rooms, so it's not a clear-cut path to your objective. But in general, it's kind of leading you down a pretty linear pathway through the game, even though the map is very much non-linear.
Are there upgrades, like optional upgrades, like the missile tanks or the energy tanks?
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, but they're just kind of on the way. Like, maybe it comes late in the game. It wouldn't surprise me. But so far, I'm about halfway through the game, and I've never really felt like trying to go back to the beginning and just explore freely. Like, I feel like the game is really pushing me along towards completion of it. And the optional upgrades are really kind of along the way. Like, if I'm paying attention and I look at the map and I say, you know what? I think there's something over there that wouldn't really be too far off the main path. I'll go over there and get it. Maybe I have to use my new upgrade. But I don't feel like it's really meandering, and I don't feel like finding where to go next is part of the challenge of the game. It pretty much just tells you. It allows you the freedom to explore, but it doesn't compel you to. So I think, you know, someone who finds and because of that, there's not really any backtracking so far that I've seen. It's always taking you to new places. You can go back to the old ones if you want to, but you don't need to. You know, those things just make the combat a little bit easier, but you really don't need that stuff because it's not super hard in the first place.
Well, and the old Strider games were, if you were good at them, could be beaten in about 30 minutes.
Yeah, and this one is much bigger, much longer. It's actually bigger and longer than I expected because these kinds of games are often very short. You know, I mean, Super Metroid is like maybe a 5-hour game, even if you're not a speedrunner. You know, I mean, maybe the first time it might take you longer, but it's not that long.
Let me revise the statement. The arcade and NES Striders, original Striders, were about 30 minutes. Once you get to the spin-offs and unofficial sequels and shit, things get weird.
I think the NES one is about 2 hours. Because I played it maybe five years ago.
It's only four stages, though. I mean, it's real short.
It is, but they're hard, and there's a lot of different...
if you're really good at it.
There's different pathways through them, and you go back to them multiple times to... Because you do get upgrades, and you do, you know, you have ways of getting into places you couldn't before. So I don't think it's not like arcade game short.
I would love to do a deep dive of that franchise sometime, because it gets real crazy.
Yeah, like, there's some weird Japan-only stuff.
There's like a Genesis game that's not Strider Hiryu. It's some other character they created, and it's terrible.
Huh.
And, I mean, it's all over the place, that franchise.
Yeah. Anyway, I this is my favorite Strider that I've played, of the three that I've played. This is my favorite, and I really, really like it. It's just really nice having a very, very fast, satisfying action game on the PS4, to follow up with Resogun. That's been the only one so far, and I really like that game too.
So here's a question, and it's kind of, it's probably somewhat of a moot point, but is there anything this game does that required it be on one of these next gen systems?
No, not at all. It also came out for PS3 and 360.
Oh, did it? Okay. Yeah. I wasn't sure if it came out for the systems as well. And Steam. Yeah, and it was on Steam. Yeah. I didn't realize it came out on PS3 360.
No, and they're the same game. The only differences are, you know, they look a little sharper. I think the frame rate is better, probably. But it's not, you know, not a huge difference. It might run on 1080 on the PS4. That wouldn't surprise me. But, okay. You know, can you even tell? I don't know. I just like playing it on PS4. It's a great controller. You know, it's a great controller, and it's nice to have a game that really puts some demands on that controller. Has me doing something, you know, that requires some dexterity and is really just, it's a very physical, like, it's a very hand-eye kind of a game. You know, it's twitchy. So I like having that on the system. I would recommend it highly. Well, folks, that's going to wrap up our new business segment. So we're going to take a quick break. We'll do Now Playing for you. And when we come back, we've got your listener mail. So stick around.
Here's a quick look at the best original content at our website, NowPlaying at NintendoWorldReport.com.
We have a feature this week, Mario Belia, Now You're Phoning with Power by Andrew Brown. Andrew bought a phone case for his iPhone that looks like an NES controller. That's all. It's a phone cover. What more do you want from me? And we also have a feature, The Odd Odyssey of Yumi, What the Heck is Umi Wara Kawase by Neil Ronahan. No, seriously.
That's a good-ass question.
No, seriously. What in the blue hell is Umiwara Kawase? I want answers. Will someone tell me what Umiwara Kawase is? Oh, wait. Neil will. Thank you, Neil.
Awesome. We have a review for Kung Fu Rabbit on 3DS by Addison Webb. If you're a rabbit who can kill foes at a touch, does combat have a purpose? If the sound drives your volume to zero, does it make noise? If it's in 2D, is it a 3DS game? Addison Webb's first review of a rabbit-based platformer makes you question the fate of trees in the woods.
Like, do they even make sound? Exactly.
That was the joke. We have Impressions, Game Center CX3 on 3DS by Dan Koopman. Dan downloaded the demo of Game Center CX3 on his Japanese 3DS. He has high praise for the demo, such as, "A demo has never turned me off so severely, and it is extra painful because it is about a show that I hold dear." Quote unquote. Well, no, that's not good. Turns out the loss of Indie Zero is hurting.
Yeah, that makes me so sad.
I was really upset. And I reading his impressions, I have never seen a line from an impressions that's like, wow, that hurts.
Yeah, well, what is good is we have a review for Professor Layton and the Azran Legacy on 3DS, of course, by Kimberly Keller. If a game comes out months later in North America and Nintendo sells it via a 4-minute retrospective on Emmy, a character nobody cares about, who ate the cake? Did I forget there was cake? We also have a feature called Zelda, A Link Between Worlds, Timeline, Problems, and Solutions by Justin Berube. Nintendo don't know shit about no Zelda. Justin gotta set him straight. Justin needs to add an addendum to his timeline to accommodate the thoroughly mediocre Link Between Worlds. James wrote that, not me.
The truth will set you free, Johnny. Lastly this week, we have a feature, Japan eShop Roundup by Danny Bivens. Danny wanted to talk about the new Fossil Fighters game on 3DS. I'd rather talk about the fact Japan has Romancing Saga 3 on the Wii U Virtual Console, the sixth Saga game. It's also amazing. And we'll never get it, because 20 years ago, right on the threshold of the N64, Square didn't feel like translating a massive RPG. There's going to be a lot of Square hate coming up in this episode, by the way, just as an FYI. It's possible we recorded them out of order!
Fourth wall! Please send a repairman to the fourth wall, thank you.
All right, guys. Well, please go check all of these completely strange articles about completely strange Nintendo games over at NintendoWorldReport.com.
NWR is a passionate bunch.
That's true.
Yeah, no kidding. Welcome back to the show, everyone. It is time for listener mail, and the address, as always, is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. Let's see, who went first today? Guillaume is up first with the first email.
Leon S. Kennedy writes, does Nintendo have the cash to buy the Xbox brand from Microsoft? What do you think Nintendo should do with Xbox if they're worth to buy it? Phase out the Wii U and put all their future products on the Xbox? Or keep both consoles and keep the Xbox as the third-party machine and the Wii U as the Nintendo IP machine? I don't know, Johnny. It's your daydream.
I feel like something I said partially in jest has maybe taken on a life of its own here. And not just because of me, because like certain investors, I think now are saying this kind of stuff, certain analysts or whatever. Although I said it might be interesting if Nintendo would buy Xbox for Microsoft, I don't actually think they're going to do it. And I don't think any of these sub questions here in Leon's email are ever going to happen. So let's just put that out in front right now.
Let me explain the real source of this particular story. Microsoft recently went through an incredibly extended process of picking its new CEO with the departure of Steve Ballmer. Satya Nadella is the individual they have chosen to lead up. He is from Microsoft Services and Cloud Division. He's very much focused on the core of their business and things like cloud infrastructure and service-based infrastructure, delivering enterprise-level solutions to products. His personal opinion that he has made clear in the past is that Microsoft should consider divorcing itself from these tertiary endeavors like the Xbox. The Xbox One, fuck off, Microsoft, is having less than what was hoped for in terms of sales. And in fact, they just recently announced a price drop in Europe?
The UK.
It's in Europe.
The UK. Yeah. By the way, if you're going to announce a price drop in one region, I'm not going to buy your console until you price drop it here. Just FYI.
Yeah, but the thing is, I think that it's kind of a price adjustment because of the currency.
Yeah.
Well, and like it's getting like, I don't know, it would be the equivalent of like a $40 decrease. It's going from like $789 to $749.
I still think that if you're cutting your price already, it reeks of desperation. And so regardless, there was an investment, an open letter from an investor, a major investor. I want to say it was published in Forbes because they're prone to publish inflammatory open letters from investors. But you have no idea what the fuck they're talking about.
It's like the penthouse letters for rich people.
Yeah, for rich people who have never had sex. Let's put it that way. It's the penthouse letters equivalent of that. And I mean, I don't even know why I read Forbes anymore, besides to make myself hurt. But it basically the premise was that Microsoft shouldn't sell their Xbox unit because it's losing money. Because in fact, it's never made money. They should just get rid of it. They should just do it, divest themselves entirely from the process, even if they just have to give it away to Nintendo for free. Just to get away from that business plan. And
well, I mean, it does lose money for them most of the time. So there's something to be said for saying, don't even try to like get a profit on it. Just
get rid of it.
Make the bleeding stop.
Yeah.
Now, I think that's really overdramatic.
It is. It's incredibly overdramatic. Now, I'm not sure Nintendo would even accept it. Because you're not only assuming all of whatever's going – owning two consoles in the space at the same time, because that's kind of fucked up.
Well, you take on their debt. You take on their supply chains and all their problems and their factories and the costs.
You take on
and by
things
the way,
like,
the division's losing money. So if you take it and don't change it, it's just going to keep losing money.
Exactly.
And then it becomes the spider on your head.
Right. And it doesn't – it flies pretty hard in the face of what Nintendo's – guiding philosophy is right now, which is that we want to design our hardware and then the software to go on top of it. They're taking essentially a Microsoft design box and then going, oh, well, we got to make it work. But yeah. assuming Nintendo did take the Xbox brand, I think they would take it with the intent of shutting it down. Because right now
picking it apart and, you know.
Right. There are three relatively distinct platforms out there right now. Because the PS4 and the Xbox One, fuck you, Microsoft, are more different than the PS3 and Xbox 360 were. And at least in the opening, you're getting kind of a weird fragmentation of the games where they're different-ish versions, different-ish. But you still have a console with the Kinect that is trying to do something different than the PS4 was trying to do, which is the Wii U is trying to do something different than both of them. So from a Nintendo standpoint, having one less competitor in the space, one less console in the space, is probably helpful. So just shutting down the Xbox One again.
Yeah, but somehow I think it would benefit Sony more.
It would, but it would benefit.
Oh, yeah.
It would benefit both of them would be benefiting. But Nintendo's not trying to drive Sony out of the marketplace. Sony is trying to drive Sony out of the marketplace. That's different.
Yeah.
No, they're not anymore.
Nintendo's trying to be profitable. And it's not about slashing the throats of all your competitors. It's about having a situation where games come to your system that you can charge a license fee for. If the only player in that high-end space is Sony, Sony can then become somewhat of an ogre, and that may drive some attention back to Nintendo. So, to an extent, the biggest thing they could probably do is shut down the Xbox, take the licenses, and use them on their systems.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't go exactly with that, but that's kind of what I had in mind when I sort of facetiously suggested this a few weeks ago. I certainly wasn't thinking that Nintendo would continue to manage both the Wii U and the Xbox One concurrently, or that they would shut down one or the other and migrate all of the games that were planned for that one over to the other one. My thought was basically that basically whichever one is in the worst shape, which is the Wii U, they would allow to trickle out probably sooner than they would have otherwise. But really, I think they would probably do that for both of them. And the main purpose of it, and again, this is all my flight of fancy, but they would basically pick out a lot of the people, the studios. Microsoft doesn't have that many game studios anymore, but they have a couple. The licenses, as James said, but also the sort of the executives and the infrastructure, the servers,
the R&D,
the technical
division.
People, largely based in America, and would use that to help them develop the next system. So for me, it wasn't so much about what would happen to even the current platforms, the so-called next-gen platforms, but rather what it might mean for the future of Nintendo, which is that I would love to see them take the best elements of Nintendo and the best elements of Microsoft and combine those, because I think they excel at very different things. I think there's very little overlap between what those two companies or what those two platforms do well. So I think combining those would be a very powerful, very potent competitor to Sony, who I think have already sort of synthesize, or at least they've patched in the holes in what they do so well that I feel like Sony doesn't have any really obvious weak points right now.
No,
I think both Nintendo and Microsoft do.
All Sony's weak points stem from a corporate issue, not so much from their platform.
Yeah, their platform is the best thing about that company right now. So
yeah, it is. It sure as shit ain't the new Xperia premium line, let's put it that way.
But they're definitely being dragged down by, a lot of other crappy product lines that, you know, have nothing to do with video games. So we're not going to talk about them right now.
So what I will say is that Microsoft's R&D divisions are astronomically good. And I know people don't think, Microsoft's a great research company. Microsoft is the research company in that space.
Oh, Kinect was badass before they had to make a consumer version of it.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, and not just Kinect.
Trust.
In Microsoft's research divisions, they are the best, period. End of discussion. It's not even open for debate. It's the stuff they have to put out in the public that they have, they have to make it economically feasible. The stuff they're building, that shit's nuts. But Microsoft's not going to let those people go. They're going to transfer them out of the Xbox division and then hand it over in this hypothetical, because those people are,
probably.
Those people are worth way more than the product line. Because they are the engineers that will design what effectively becomes the next Microsoft product. Now, some of them may leave.
And it's tough to buy a company, or it's tough to, I think, buy a piece of a company and get all the people with it.
Like,
you know, they're not slaves. Like, you can't, you know, they're not under contract usually. So,
yeah, and Microsoft knows a thing about that with the Rare acquisition.
Yeah. Well, and you can, but you can learn.
I thought you meant because of all their slave farms.
Yeah. They grow slaves out next to the cabbage. Here's what you could, compare it to actually more recently is the Motorola acquisition by Google. When they bought the company, pillaged it for talent and patents, and then sold it again. Although the investors complained, quote, at a loss, but they took everything they wanted. Hmm. They took all the parts they wanted and then sold Motorola to, Lenovo. So while they lost $1 billion, they gained more than $1 billion in people and assets.
And I think to answer Leon's question, the initial one, does Nintendo have the cash to buy Microsoft? Not in a world where messaging apps are getting $16 billion.
Yeah, the current economics of acquisitions and purchasing in the technology field is completely just destroyed because there are companies trying to bid for things just to maintain viability. So they'll throw whatever amount of cash it requires in order to limp along.
Well, bizarro, you know, Zynga IPOs and shit. I think, in theory, it would probably be pretty much all of Nintendo's money, which is, again, a reason why they will not do this. But they probably could do it at extreme risk to their own future. Yeah. Especially if Microsoft was willing to sell it at a loss or break it up into pieces and sell Nintendo only the parts they care about and close down the rest, something like that. If they're willing to take some losses on the sale just to stop the quarterly losses from operating it,
right,
then I think, yeah, it's in the realm of possibility. But again, it's not going to happen. I don't want to talk about this, you know, forever because it's silly hypothetical.
I mean, unless you're...
I feel responsible for this in part, and it's silly.
Yeah. Can I just say, though, that if Nintendo somehow ended up with Kinect, that'd be roughly equivalent to having the hula hoop inventor buy the pet rock.
No kidding. All right. So let's see. James, could you read the next email, please?
Captain K writes, I just finished up an interesting contract for Nintendo. I was part of a test program where Nintendo posted full-time sales associates in several Toys R Us stores across the country to see if our presence would boost sales. It was my job to keep the Nintendo sections clean and stocked, as well as help anyone with any Nintendo-related questions from November through February. It all seemed to have a very positive effect in my location, though I don't know how it went elsewhere. I learned a lot during the process, but the most apparent thing I found was the confusion surrounding the Wii U is very real, especially with parents / non-gamers. I did find that once I explained the Wii U is what the Wii U actually is, a lot of parents were far more interested in buying it for their kids. Also, I'm not sure if it's the same where you guys are from, but every time I go to a Best Buy, GameStop, Target, etc., I always find that their Nintendo sections are sadly neglected, especially when compared to other platforms. I can say in my experience, if retailers put the same amount of effort into selling and merchandising Nintendo products as they do everything else, it has a huge impact. Anyway, I thought it was a fascinating little experiment, and it shows that NOA is actually trying something to help bolster Nintendo sales. What do you guys think? Is this something that would be a good strategy for Nintendo? Should they expand programs like this?
Well, they definitely have some image problem in that they don't have, they don't have a presence anywhere. They don't have, people don't know they exist. They don't know what the Wii U is. And, I've had anecdotally.
You can't even buy your systems on Amazon.
Yeah. Well, I've had my sister ask me, what the hell's a Wii U? She had never heard of the name even. Like, she wasn't misguided, thinking, oh, is this an add-on for the Wii? She had absolutely no idea this was a product out there somewhere.
I love the idea of these Nintendo evangelist people hanging out in the stores and confronting you hey, sign my petition to save the rainforest. I love this idea. And I tell you, if I was a 5-6-year-old kid going into Toys R Us or somewhere like that, and I found out there was a Nintendo person, a person from Nintendo in the store, I would run over there like it was Santa Claus. I would love to talk to that person. I would love to find out what games they would recommend for me or what they're showing off. And I think a lot of kids would be thrilled at the opportunity. Really. I mean, as cheesy as it might sound to an adult, I think it's a good idea.
I will say that when they did the Best Buy tours during E3, That was a, we talked about, so that was a trained Nintendo PR event rep who had done events for Nintendo at things like the New York things they used to do mm-hmm. when they still do them, when they bring in press to see stuff in San Francisco. Like,
they used to call those people Team Nintendo. I don't know if that's still, if that organization exists as such anymore, but they were basically a mobile team of marketing people. A lot of, they were kind of like interns. A lot of them were younger people. There were a couple of managers who were older. I knew a couple of them, but, they would travel around the country in first, I think a van back in the early days. And then it was the truck, you know, and they would be in the big, 18 wheeler with like Wii stuff in the back. And they would go around to college campuses or malls around America, and you hear about every now and then Nintendo does press releases about them, but I think they're out there pretty much all the time,
yeah,
doing stuff like this, but they're not necessarily hanging out in stores as like a regular press. This sounds like the Boar's Head rep who shows up at the grocery store twice a month and tells and gives you like a bunch of free samples and convinces you to buy really expensive deli meats and cheeses, and it works.
So I'll say I work – I'm trying to be relatively opaque here. I work in merchandising, or I work in a field related to a division that does merchandising, let's put it that way. And although
that
we don't –
That is opaque.
It is very opaque. I work support for a division that does merchandising, let's put it that way. While they – while we ultimately retail our own stuff, we do have vendors come in who, you know, we do contract work for. That basically they just make their stuff look real nice. And that's all they do. They mm-hmm. they show up, they go to each location, make stuff look real, make their displays look real good, you know, refresh them every so often, and it makes some degree of difference in just that it looks more professional that way. People come in and it's very, everything is cleanly laid out. I mean, ultimately with the video game section, unless you have somebody just hand-holding it all the time, that section is going to look like utter garbage pretty quickly. Yeah. Unless you're willing to do what Target does, which is just lock everything up behind the glass wall. Because, I mean, kids are going to pick stuff up, ask their parents if they can have it. They'll be told no. They'll just stick it wherever. And eventually you
end... Is it asking so much to have some kind of organization system? I mean, Target actually does put them in alphabetical order, I think, or for at least part of the display. And it's like you don't have to be a video game expert to go over there and put things in the right place so people can find
them. It's just time. It's just, is there enough time in the day for you to stop what you're doing, walk over there, and just resort the utter chaos that has evolved in your section? And I think, ultimately, while Nintendo could, in theory, hire people to go to stores and do that, no matter how many stores you put them in, that's just a drop in the bucket. Because there are thousands upon thousands of retail outlets that sell Nintendo products in the U.S. And it's not reasonable to put somebody there all the time. What you can do, and I've seen this to an extent in some other industries, is you send around people whose job it is to that you have to deal with the corporate, and you know we want to help design our layout section. Ted has actually done this in the past, and then you go there and you try to enforce the layout standards that corporate's agreed with, and you partner with the staff that works there to offer them supplemental training on your product and your available merchandise.
That's very dry. I think, and it may be effective, but it's not super interesting to me. I would more want them to do like what the Boar's Head rep does, which is basically educate random passersby about your brand in such a way that they will not only buy something at that moment, that point of sale, but also they will feel informed enough that the next time they come back around and they say, oh, that was really good, I could go for another one like that, they know what to pick. They know what to try. And you can totally do that with video games, especially with the amount of word of mouth that people have about video games and not so much deli meats and cheeses. I think, you know, if you get in even a fraction of the weekly audience who would be trafficking that store and you teach them about the games Nintendo has and about what the different systems are, and you tell them about multiple different games and try to figure out what kinds of stuff that they like, they will get lots of ideas for games they want, and they will go and tell their friends about those too, and you really multiply the effect of it. So I think educating people about your product is very clearly the issue at the heart of Wii U's problems right now, and I think just I think having an educational or maybe a better word is informative tone about having these people go out there. I think having them directly interact with people rather than just, you know, clean up the display and then sneak out of there. I think the direct engagement is very valuable in a product like a video game where people do tell their friends about it. I mean, what the hell are we doing right here? You know, so it matters that people know what games you have out and what they're about and what, you know, what makes them cool.
I just don't think you're going to be able to put people out there enough that it makes a huge difference.
Well, you might, I don't know, you might partner with certain retailers and have them put up like a Nintendo store within their store, or within their big box store. And there are other manufacturers who do that. Like,
most big box retailers are trying to shrink their floor space right now, though.
Yeah, I know, but they do partner up with like Microsoft to have like the Windows corner or whatever, and like the Samsung experience. And you have the one rep who's like the one, say, Best Buy employee who's there. His job is kind of subsidized by Microsoft or Samsung, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe something like that, like maybe Nintendo wouldn't have to shoulder entirely, like actually employ all these people, but maybe have these retailers, you know, like dedicate one employee to Nintendo products.
Makes sense to me. Cool. Well, I'm glad to hear that they're doing this, and thank you very much for telling us about it, Captain K. So the next email is going to be read by Donald.
Hacker alias Darkerai writes, over the past 15 days, a unique project has been going on with Pokemon Red Version. Someone wrote a script to read the chat at twitch.tv for button inputs being called out by viewers, and then input them into an emulator playing the game. The result is a massive clusterfuck, as tens of thousands of people all play the same copy of Pokemon at the same time. In addition to significant meta discussions as to how to make progress despite the chaotic mob, an entire narrative has spawned from the memes and various happenings of the event, with a sort of subculture spawning over half-joking religions founded around the helix and dome fossils from the game, each having dogmatic arguments over what the correct way to play is, anarchy versus democracy, and what the true goal of the project is itself. There's an awful lot to say about this project, both in regards to the premise itself and the culture around it, and I'm very curious to hear about what you guys have to say about it. Praise be to Helix!
I don't even know. I think
Twitch Plays Pokemon is like our generation's monolith from 2001 A Space Odyssey. It's like this enigmatic, strange robotic thing that shows up and all of the masses crowd around it and beat their fists at it. And even though they have no idea what they're doing or what's going on, something magical happens. And I hope ultimately it evolves us into a higher form of being, but I'm not sure if it will.
Jesus Christ.
I
did not have a prepared response like this.
I've actually been following it, and I find it amazing that they've gone from religion to politics. I half expect them to start legalizing same-sex Pokemon marriage at some point.
I don't think the game engine supports that in Red Version.
Yeah, breeding came later.
You didn't have breeding yet, so there's not really any other way to pair them up.
Way to ruin the joke, Johnny. God!
Hey, I'm just saying. Pokemon's come a long way, you know. It's catching up with the times.
Yeah, I've been sort of watching this myself from afar. I'm not going in that main chat room because it's between the trolls, the general mob scene, and the fact that there's about 30,000 bots in there at any one time. It's a minefield.
Oh God.
Are people building bots as a way to sort of multiply their influence over the process?
Yeah, and there was a combination of bots and fans of another streamer who was getting his views lowered by Pokemon, who actually tried to invade the chat room at some point to try and release all the good Pokemon and end the project.
But don't they know, like, they're only making it stronger? They can't kill it that way.
Hey, by the way, if you use Twitch TV, fuck off. You're the worst.
There will be a book written one day about the failed assassination attempt against Twitch Plays Pokemon. That's amazing. I can't believe, I mean, I can. Every time I hear something new about this thing, I say, oh my God, I can't believe that. But then what do you expect when you let the internet collectively play a video game? I think this is all exactly what I would want to happen. I mean, it's so crazy.
So it's
a deep, deep hole to get into. If you start reading about it, you are entering the Matrix. I mean, it's crazy.
So I used
but
to play,
it's so funny too.
I used to either play or watch people play games back on like old message boards. They just post screenshots and just the first response is what you do. And like, I got into some real fucked up games doing that stuff. It was just like, you know what you need to do? You need to build, I'd be playing like Total Annihilation. You need to build 100 solar collectors. Well, that's all I can build. Well, yeah, good. Have fun. So it's just like, all right, now what? Just stand there. All right, fuck. And you just sit there and you just wait until disaster strikes. But conversely, you know, a lot of the
games... Well, yeah, that's a horrible way to do it. But what's great about this is that Pokemon actually works with this dumb idea. Like, it's such a robust game that it's very hard to break it in such a way that you can't proceed. So it's very tolerant to people abusing it in this way. And yet still, you know, the sort of, you know, group will of the people moves it forward, or at least the people who have the most influence
are
able to steer the Ouija board in such a way that they've now, last I heard, they had all 8 badges, which is, I can't even do that. I mean, you know, it would, fuck, that's amazing. You know, I'm in awe. I really am. Like, it's an irritating story in that people are talking about it so much. But if you can strip away the clamor and the, you know, the silliness of the coverage of this thing, because it's still going, right? So people are just really obsessed with it. But I think when we look back on this, whenever it ends, I don't even know what that would look like. I don't know if the guy just turns it off one day and says, okay, kids, you've had your fun. Go home, get some work done. But I think one day we will look back on this and say, what an insane thing. Like, I think this is going to be one of the top news stories of the year for video gaming. It really is just a bizarre cultural experiment that has succeeded beyond anyone's wildest expectations. And I think it's fabulous.
The streamer has hinted that they might hack the team into a gold or silver ROM and then play through that one and see if we can get a mob going again. So that the end game team will be the exact team that they had in the first run.
Almost like a new game plus, just kind of move it over and
move it up, move it up.
Interesting.
Move it up a generation. But yeah. I think the point where, I don't know if you want to call it jumping the shark or whatever, is the about 3-page long chart of the history of the religion of this game.
Yeah. It's all tongue in cheek though, right? I mean, it's just people role playing basically. It's like fanfic growing again collectively, you know, because so many people are involved and these jokes, it's like these little sub communities and subgroups develop within the mob of people playing Pokemon together and they come up with these weird things that go viral and other people kind of latch onto it.
Yeah, and
I don't know, like, are they really joking? Because we kind of had like some sort of religion coming out of Avatar, you know, if a bad sci-fi movie
really?
Can actually spawned, like, made people paint
honestly,
themselves blue.
Honestly, that sounds like something I would have written as a joke. Like, the theology of Avatar. Like, I've written shit like that before, and, like, I hope somebody wrote that as a joke, and people took it seriously. And the person who wrote that as a joke is just laughing every single day for the rest
Look,
of his life.
Anyway, I think the whole, you know, Helix, praise Helix or whatever thing out of Twitch Plays Pokemon, it's really very innocent. I think it's, I mean, I haven't read deeply into it, but on the face of it, I think it sounds funny and silly, and I doubt anybody's really getting too crazy about it. It sounds like the kind of hijinks they used to do at Camp Hyrule. You know, these like summertime, like 2-week-long big chat room events at Nintendo's website where there was a lot of role playing, but it's all very, you know, G-rated, very, you know, innocent and cute, and nothing weird went on. It was very heavily moderated. It was actually kind of hard to get into, but you could win prizes. You got to talk to these counselors who worked in Nintendo's marketing or PR or whatever. And then occasionally they would bring in game developers and do interviews. It was like you wanted to be there for it. I mean, we used to try to get into it, you guys are going to think I'm silly, but back in like the Informant days and maybe even the early Planet N 2000 stuff, we would try to get into it as a means to watch for any news that might come out, because it had this, you know, public mob of people pestering game developers with random questions. And sometimes they might say something that was, you know, vaguely interesting. I mean, we used to troll the letters page at Rare's website called Scribes, because every now and then the guy who wrote that would, like, usually it was something kind of historical, but he would reveal some really interesting facts about what happened at Rare, and we would, like, write news stories from their letter page every now and then. So I don't know what this has to do with Twitch Plays Pokemon, but
everything and nothing.
And and the other thing I've really loved about is how the narratives have actually shifted during the course of the game, as there was one Pokemon who was originally thought of as an Antichrist figure. Now he's a martyr.
All right, I'm going to move on now because my brain doesn't want this. My brain is rejecting this conversation.
This whole stuff scares me. It's not as complicated maybe as like EVE Online, but I kind of treat it the same way. It's kind of interesting when the news pop up from time to time, but I never touch that with a 10-foot pole.
Yeah. And way to go on having the guy whose NWR username is a Pokemon read the Pokemon question from the Pokemon guy.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Darkerai. You got us to talk about it. Good work. Okay, so we're going to wrap up the show with one more email. This one comes from Buttle, who writes, "With Tropical Freeze out now, what is your feelings towards true sequels, where little has changed? Are you okay with one or two sequels? Is there a limit? Mega Man and Animal Crossing come to mind as games with very little change in their sequels, where I've really had to think about if I wanted to pick up the next title. For me, I'm always up for one sequel. I get that developers like to reuse assets, and if I like the first game, I'll play another. But with a third or fourth, the game really needs a big change for me to get interested. What do you think? Also, Best Buy is having their second, I believe, $50 point card sale for $40, and Nintendo has had a similar deal. How much does this sort of thing tempt you?" Am I the only one who bit on the reduced eShop cards?
Well, yeah, I was busy. Two of us can't really partake. In that,
yeah, that's true. Yeah, you guys in Canada, that sucks.
Yeah,
yeah, we don't see the eShop cards going on sale very often. I don't. Maybe I haven't been watching closely enough, but I don't think that's happened.
I haven't seen them go on sale. I've used trade credit to buy them before, but there's never been an official sale. And considering Nintendo now thinks Yoshi's New Island is worth $45 on the eShop in Canada, we kind of need them.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
Oh, man. You could use a discount.
Yeah, prices have been going up because the Canadian dollar has been going down in value. Mm-hmm. And the retailers are always way quicker to adjust the prices up than they are adjusting them down.
It took months
and months and months of parity with the U.S. dollar. And finally, okay, games are finally, you know, at the cheap, cheap price of $60. And, well, that's gone. Those were the days.
And it's worse with Nintendo because their prices never drop, so I can still buy Mario Kart DS for $45.
Which won't be online as of, what, like a week from now or something like that?
May 20th.
May 20th. So that's a little bit longer than I thought it was. There you go. Maybe they'll finally drop the price once they turn off the servers.
Yeah, last chance to get your snaking on.
Oh, I always get my snaking on. Miss you, John.
yeah. Really?
Stinger.
And about the first question, like, it really depends on the type of game and what, I don't know, like, what I'm looking for out of a game. I'm way more tolerant of samey 2D platformers. I don't know if anyone noticed. I
mean, how many friggin' Mega Man games have we played?
Oh, yeah. And I wanted to touch on that because when we played Mega Man, was it 2 or 3 that we played?
3.
We played 3.
3.
I just went through them all and I would not stop playing them. I just immediately, I would, you know, like finish 5. Okay, I'm going to start 6. And it's only once I got to the ones that were more different that I started losing interest. So I was, it helps when the game is really, really short and it leaves you feeling like, oh, okay, I could go for more of this.
Yeah, it also helps when it's super awesome, like Mega Man.
Absolutely.
I could take another hit from that bowl.
A lot of these modern 2D platformers don't hold a candle to that game, in my opinion. No. I was just gonna say I picked up a shitload of eShop cards because I missed the last sale and my income was at the right place this time for me to kind of stock up. And at this point, it's basically a sale on all Nintendo games that I will play for the next year because they release friggin' everything on the eShop, which is awesome. So, I didn't get them in time for Donkey Kong. I bought that at full price, but the next four or five games I buy, on either the Wii U or the 3DS. That's the other thing. Like now that the balance is shared between the two, I don't have to make these hard choices about, do I put two cards on the Wii U account and the other two, you just use it, whatever comes up, I get to use it. So I think it's fantastic.
Yeah. It's basically you're getting free money. You're paying, well, not free. You're paying for money, but you're paying to get more money. Yeah.
It's money for nothing and chicks for free,
Yeah.
But it's great.
I'm still trying to run off my 33% pre-orders from E3 last year anyway. I think I've got about 8 left.
Yeah, I don't think we ever talked about that on the podcast, but the Future Shop over here in Canada had this insane deal where every game that would be shown at E3, you could pre-order them and get a stupid discount. And I got none of that. And I kind of feel stupid.
There you go.
I'm getting both versions of Smash Brothers for $60, and I love it.
Whoa.
Nice.
Yeah, that's good. I remember when Wii U first came out, I got the deluxe system, of course, and I was reading about the digital deluxe program, and it said, you only get your 10% back on Wii U digital games until like December 2015, I think it is. And I remember being kind of pissed about that. I was like, that's not that long. That's 3 years. But I mean, I was kind of felt like this was built into this system that I bought. And I certainly expect my system to last longer than 3 years. But I looked at it again the other day. I was on the website looking to see if I had a code to redeem. And I saw that notice again. And I thought, by the end of 2015, probably not a whole lot coming out after that on Wii U.
Is it really?
And I'm serious. It's sad. But really, I think that's probably, it's going to have peaked before then. There might be a couple more things, but I feel like there's not like a long life for Wii U new releases after the end of 2015. That's already kind of stretching it the way things are going right now. So maybe, I don't know, it's okay.
It wasn't the digital deluxe promotion only for 2 years. So at the end of 2014.
No, it said 15.
I thought it was 2014, you earned the codes. 2015, you had until the end of 2015 to cash out.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Ugh. So the end of this year.
This year.
That really is kind of a trial period then. Well, it'd be nice if they extended it, I'd be okay if that was their ambassador program is, hey, if you bought the deluxe thing, we're going to extend this for a couple more years. Mm-hmm. Like that. That seems like a very easy thing for them to do, and it would make me fairly happy because I use that, because I buy all my Wii U games digitally. So I get some nice rewards back, It's very similar to the Best Buy thing. If you're signed up for their program and buying a whole bunch of stuff there, you get your 10% back every now and then. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it's 5, I don't know. But it's nice.
Anyone is going to chime in on the sequel thing?
On
sequels? Yeah.
Yeah, sure. We can go back to that.
There are games where I just feel like this has gotten real out of hand and it needs to stop. But at the same time, I've already paid for Layton. So, and I got upset last year when I didn't have a Layton game to play. So, I mean, it happened.
Let's see, for me, Layton is like, I can skip them. So I don't really care that they make so many and that they're all similar. I can wait every third Layton game
and
that's a good
they're not
pace.
Even really games. They're just kind of like, I have a yearly event where I have a weekend where I solve a bunch of puzzles.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't play through them as long as you do, so they're a little more satisfying for me, maybe. But, Pokemon is the same way. Pokemon Y is the first
Pokemon
one I've
y,
bought
yes.
since Diamond.
Because it makes a lot of money.
Yeah. 11 million, was it? But yeah,
fucking ridiculous.
Pokemon for me is weird because that and Layton are the two games I will buy every time day one, no questions asked, just to see what they've changed from the previous iteration, whether that means they're adding things or taking
not
things
much.
Away. Yeah.
What they've changed, Donald, is very little.
Yeah, but
that's why I buy every third or fourth game in the series, because by then the little tiny changes have piled up so that it actually feels kind of new to me, except still very, very, very familiar.
It's not change that I'm looking for as much as improving the stuff that irks me. And the thing is, if there's a problem I have with a certain game, if the franchise keeps doing the same thing over and over again and keeps that problem in, it's just going to irritate me more until up to the point where I just can't take it anymore. Like the Mario and Luigi games, they've always been a little bit verbose, and it seems to have gotten worse, and they seem to get more handholdy, and it's always the same fighting system. And at a certain point, I was playing the Dream Team demo, and wow, there's no way I'm going to touch that game, because it seems to be every problem I had with Bowser's Inside Story, but just more of it. I was already tired of that stuff in Bowser's Inside Story. I'm not going to pay for the opportunity to go through even more boring dialogue.
Yeah, I really like Bowser's Inside Story. I have a couple of nags with it, but if you didn't like that game in the first place, you definitely don't want to get involved with a new one.
Right.
Because I don't think most people even think it's as good, even on the basic merits of that franchise. You know, even the people who still like those games don't really think that the new one is all that great, which is really sad. I mean, you know, there aren't that many big time RPGs for 3DS, especially back in 2013. There weren't. Now we have Bravely Default we can point to, which has its own weird flaws. But, you know, it's really sad when you get a big time game like that and it doesn't turn out to be that great.
Yeah.
Well, there's always Superstar Saga on the Wii U in April. You have that to look forward to.
Oh.
That's honestly, that's my favorite one. And it's really good. I might pay for that again and play through it again. Even though, do I have it? Is it one of the ambassador games? I can't remember.
It's the only one of the three they announced that isn't an ambassador game.
Okay, well then I probably will end up buying that, actually. I would love to play through it again. And by the way, that one's short. That's like 10 or 15 hours. Those games got way too long, I think. Even Bowser's Inside Story, I want to say, took me over 20. Even friggin' Super Paper Mario was like over 20 or 25 hours. It had no business being that long.
The thing that never appeals to you about those franchises is they're not serious RPGs. I mean, they don't. You know, there's not a lot of systems.
Oh, no?
There's not a lot of systems to learn about them. But they also felt like they need to pace themselves like there is. It's like...
Right.
It's like,
that's a good point.
It's like,
yeah.
No, this is kind of a satire of the genre. Satire should be quick and punchy. Just go with it.
I forget which one of us was talking about Final Fantasy Mystic Quest recently.
God.
But actually, one thing I really like about that game is that, yes, while it's very dumbed down, the mechanics are very simplistic compared to other Final Fantasy games, it's really fast paced and it gets moving and it doesn't spend a ton of time holding your hand and walking you through these very simple things. It's more like, Half Minute Hero or something like that. It's not that hyperactive, you know, it's not that fast paced, but it's kind of more in that direction. It's fun and breezy to play through because it is so simple.
I wouldn't say fun. And I wouldn't, no.
I played maybe
like an hour of it. It's really bad. And you've got these, you know, like you go from area to area, they're marked points of the map. You can't explore the map. You just like follow the trail, basically. And when you do need, like, the game will tell you, oh, okay, you might need to grind, so here's a Colosseum. And so you just do these a series of 10 battles there, and there's no progression. Like, you might have, like, okay, you're going to get two enemies, and then you're going to fight again the same two enemies, and then three, and then you go back to two.
That game is awful garbage.
I disagree. I've played through that entire
once. Square Enix should basically delete every copy of that game and say, we are sorry. Please understand, it was a different time.
Now you're going to get the death threats. This is nothing compared
to
DMC.
Nobody is
going to
defend fucking Mystic Quest.
Yes, they will. There, I promise you, there is a cult of people who think that game is great.
Those people are idiots!
There's also a minority of people like me who think it's okay.
Oh, if you like Mystic Quest, you are an idiot and should be ashamed. There.
Can I at least say that Mystic Quest has the best battle music in a Final Fantasy game?
There's plenty of good music in that game.
Mystic Quest has the best character shrugging sprite of any Final Fantasy, and they use it.
Yeah, because that's what Final Fantasy Mystic Quest is.
And,
it's one giant shrug.
They know they have it because they use it like 3 times in the first 20 minutes. The main character is always
a warning.
Like,
it's a red flag.
I know this is stupid.
If you like Final Fantasy, don't play this game. Because it's not.
Yeah.
Oh, it's garbage. It is disgusting garbage for babies. It is. Wow. It is an insult. It is a square made insult to Western gamers. That's literally what it is. They're not capable of handling the complex gameplay of Final Fantasy. Let's make this garbage instead.
All right. Well, that certainly was a very fun batch of listener mail. Thank you so much to everyone who wrote in. And you can add your letter to the list for us to consider next time. The address is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. And by the way, if you've had any trouble with the email form on our website, we recently relaunched, and I think there was a very minor bug that might have affected a small number of people. I think we fixed that today. So if you had trouble before, please try again. We are on the case, as always. And we love hearing from people. So please do email in your questions, especially if they have to do with Final Fantasy Mystic Quest or ActRaiser 2.
No. Unless,
or Twitch Plays
unless
Pokemon.
The email starts with, hey, here are two games that shouldn't have existed. Let's talk about them.
We'll talk about damn near anything on this podcast as long as it has something vaguely to do with video games or Nintendo. So thank you everyone for listening, and thank you so much, Donald, for being our guest this week. Where can people hear more from you, sir?
We have Nintendo Free Radio is the podcast I'm regularly hosting. That's at nintendofreeradio.podbean.com, or there'll probably be a link in the show notes. And we also have a threat.
Like Podbean, the musical fruit?
Yes.
And, is that how you spell it? B-E-A-N? Okay.
Yeah. And there's also a thread for each one of our episodes at the NWR forums in the general chat section. That's probably the easiest.
Yeah, that's the best place to go.
Yeah, best way to do it. And I'm on Twitter at Donald Mick. And, you know, ActRaiser 2 and Mystic Quest sounds like a hell of a retroactive.
The fuck it does!
Oh.
It sounds like the end of RFN is what it sounds like.
The duel to the
death.
I
will take this ship down.
Those are the only two options in the poll.
No, like we should have, like, the poll is going to be like all
poll
the
has zero votes.
All the virtual console games I regret buying. So that will be next Gold Patrol.
Hey, guys, pick one of these games I think's awful.
I think
China
people would
Warrior.
Enjoy
we
that.
Have one choice next poll. It's China Warrior. There.
We should do a bad game retroactive, like an intentionally bad game. I think that would be funny. Akusoge retroactive.
Oh.
Well, it's decided. Okay. So go check out
your
Donald's
Kudio
podcast.
Game
it's really
next,
fun.
Next retroactive.
Join our forums and follow up in the community chat section there to find out what's going on with Nintendo Free Radio. Thank you very much for listening to Radio Free Nintendo this week and every week, and we will talk to you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
I hate you swear at Unix. And you know how I can prove that? They call
it have you actually played it,
yes,
James?
Yes, I've played it.
Have
I
you
have.
Played it? All
oh,
right.
God.
I'm surprised that you hate it that much, because I think it's fine. I think it's okay.
How recently have you played it?
I played it.
It's been a long time for me.
I could have guessed that.
When I was a teenager,
that.
I was like, oh, this is okay.
I think I played it.
Yeah, I might not like it now.
I played it 3 years ago on a dare. I didn't mind.
It's not good.
Yeah, it's when it came out on Virtual Console, I thought for like 10 seconds about whether I wanted to buy it and decided, I'm
good. I just sat there and said, this is what you're going to release on Virtual Console. Really? Of all the fucking games you could release, Square Enix, that's the one
you
picked.
Actually, James, no shit. It actually, I was really happy to see that because it gave me a sense that maybe they're going to release more of their obscure games. And they kind of teased in that direction towards the end of the Wii lifespan. And then unfortunately they had to kind of restart now with 3DS and Wii U. And they're in the business of releasing things like Final Fantasy 2 and 3. But when I saw that, I thought, well, maybe we will get ActRaiser 2 and,
ActRaiser 2?
And
why do you want the bad Paladin's version
Quest
of games?
And Illusion of Gaia and all that other weird shit, you know? So from that standpoint, at least, I thought it was a good sign that they're releasing these very non-mainstream Final Fantasy games.
ActRaiser 2, why?
I wouldn't mind them putting it out on Wii U just so that they'd actually have something on Wii U in North America.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
I got to get on
Let's end this. It's going to end after a James rant anyway.
Yep. Exactly.
We've named two Square games that Square Enix games that shouldn't exist. That's a good way to end the show. Mystic Quest and ActRaiser 2. Two games that take all the good parts out of their source material. Way to be, Square Enix.
But they're still
good. No, they're not!
Okay, well, they are.
Both terrible.
I think they are.
You'll find in the final edit who has the final word.
Yeah, really. It's not really up to
the
us to decide.
The title is
going to
be 372. For once, I agree with James.
Oh, God. Right.
Conclude.
I'm concluded for the night.
I laughed myself dry. Horrible. Let's restart the call.
Okay.
I like it.
Do we keep recording?
Yeah. Just roll. Yeah. Just keep rolling.
I've lost the call! Come back!
Wow, that sounded bad.
Yeah, well, I clipped. I deliberately caused my microphone to clip.
Oh, okay.
And now we just play the waiting game for Johnny.
And then he never answers. And that's the end of episode 372.
The waiting game is boring. Let's play Hungry Hungry Hippos.